we exist? Were we created with a purpose, or are we just here by chance? What are we to believe about life, faith, and worldview? Welcome to the Universe Next Door, focusing on answers to the questions we all consider. This show is a ministry of the C.S. Lewis Society and supported by gifts of listeners just like you. Join us as we seek to see a generation captivated and transformed by the truth of Christianity. This is The Universe Next Door.
Welcome to The Universe Next Door. If you're listening when this episode is coming out here, you'll notice that it's released on a Friday, not a Monday, and that's because this is a special release. And it's a special release because it's a special episode, and it's a special episode because we have Andrew Peterson and Chris Wall from the Wingfeather Saga. Many of you may have read that fictional book series, but they're actually making it into a new TV show, which is released just right now. If you go, you can find it right now. We'll link everything in the description. But they used a very unique type of art. It's a fictional series where there's a lot of analogies and metaphors to Christianity, but not so much that you can't use your imagination. So it is a very awesome series. It's a crowdfunded TV show, and they actually broke the record that The Chosen had previously held. And for those of you listening, you've probably all seen The Chosen. So they broke the record that that Chosen had held for raising money to make a crowdfunded series. So this is going to be just a really, really, really cool thing. In fact, I'll put the trailer down there below so you can check that out too, and you can see the sort of unique artwork that they used in the show. But anyway, they're going to tell us a little bit about that. They're very excited for the release, and they're also going to talk a little bit about how important imagination is to Christianity. And for those of you who are new to The Universe Next Door, now you may not know this, but other people will know that we are part of the C.S. Lewis Society. So obviously, we are huge on imagination, and even the idea of using your imagination to defend Scripture. That's what C.S. Lewis had done in a lot of cases. And so these books and this TV series will remind you a little bit of like a Narnia Lord of the Rings kind of deal, but it's a very unique thing. It's certainly not a copy of those, and it is its own thing, but I put it in that category. It's very cool. So Andrew and Chris are going to join us here to talk about the Wingfeather Saga series. And also, don't forget that Monday, a couple days from now, we're going to be releasing our episode with Paul Copan. Dr. Copan breaks down what slavery is and is not in the Bible, and so that's going to be able to help you really defend when somebody brings that topic up. It's a tough one, especially in our culture today. So he goes into great detail on that, so make sure to check that out Monday. And with that being said, let's get into the Wingfeather Saga. We have with us today Andrew Peterson, who is the award-winning author of the Wingfeather Saga, as well as Chris Wall, who is the executive producer of the brand new TV show. Andrew and Chris, how are you guys?
Good, thank you.
Good to see you.
You too. And this, I've been really excited about this. I've had tons of authors on the show, but I don't think I've ever had a fictional author. And certainly never had somebody who's producing a fictional book as a TV show. So this is a first for me. I'm pretty pumped.
Well, we're glad to be here. This is the first time I've ever been a fictional author who's producing a TV show of the books too.
Yeah,
right? Well, first for everybody.
Yeah, there we go. And Andrew, this didn't slip my attention. Are you a beekeeper in your spare time?
I am. I'm a failing beekeeper right now. I lost both of my hives this year, but I am. It's been something I've been into for 6 or 7 years now, something like that.
Wow, that's awesome. My wife and I love honey, and it's not cheap, but I'd imagine raising bees isn't cheap either.
Well, if you live next door, I would bring free honey to you whenever you wanted it.
Oh, maybe I'll move up there. And Chris, you've also done a lot of work on VeggieTales. Now, on behalf of my 9-month-old son who wanted me to ask this question, how many times have you heard the VeggieTales theme song?
Oh, my. Far too many. Because not only did I hear it in the show, but I actually, our team was in charge of supporting the live touring one where the characters be on stage. Mm-hmm. That's when you hear it a lot more for rehearsals. And yes, that song.
Brutal.
Well, yeah.
The guy, side note about VeggieTales, Kurt Heinicke, the guy who's one of the main guys in the music team, is the guy. He actually played the tuba, right? He's the brr, 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 brr. He's the dude that did it. Yeah. So it is. I feel a little giddy around him every time. I don't know if I feel giddy or if I want to punch him in the face. I'm not sure.
Exactly.
Does he carry the tuba around with him wherever he goes?
Always, well, yes. And always. He's a vegetable.
Yeah.
must give you nightmares. So anyway, with that being said, the Wing Feather Saga is the number one crowdfunded animated series. And it actually beat the record held by The Chosen, which basically everyone in the world except for me has seen. So that's going to be pretty exciting. What was your guys' reaction when that happened?
Their team was quick to point out that they had loosened the cookie jar for us. So, and we beat them just in the initial fundraising, beat them on pace. As far as overall record, they're still ahead of us with their show being out in the world. But, you know, we were incredibly nervous going into that. You know, knowing that people love these books, but would they show up and want to support it financially? You know, that's a different question, right? And support it in a really meaningful way, because animation is expensive, especially when you want to do it with a certain level of craft. But Andrew has long believed in the kind of development of his audience and through the books and other ways, and has done a couple of Kickstarters, of course. So there was some early ideas that we might be able to do it. But when it happened, it was pretty overwhelming to us both, just the amount of support.
Yeah, I would imagine. And actually, I had a question about that. When I had watched the trailer and everything, both I noticed this, but also in the comments, a lot of people were saying like the animation is such a unique style that they haven't seen before. It's not like the norm that Pixar and everybody's using. It's like a really unique, like artsy kind of style. Could you talk a little bit about that? Because I have no idea how any of that's done.
Yeah, it was a really intentional choice. I know Andrew and I talked about just the story itself is unique. I think one of the things that's really great about the Wing Feather Saga project is this fitment of a really distinct story that isn't like other things on the shelf at Barnes & Noble and places, combined with a real intentional choice to develop our animation style differently. You know, when you're in an industry that's been built a certain way and does a certain thing for a long time, it's very hard to reconsider how things are done. And so way back in 2015, we had this idea with our friend Keith Lango, who's our animation development and supervisor. Could we, you know, render animation differently? Could it be more painterly? Could we feel the artist's hand right on the screen? A lot of us had gotten the art of books, you know, from these different animated films, and the art in those books is so wonderful. Sometimes it becomes a little more antiseptic as it goes through the computer. What could we do differently? And that led us to developing this visual style, which I'll tell you, when we shopped it to a lot of studios, all the big ones, they all loved it, but thought that the audiences wouldn't want to watch it, that the audiences wanted the Pixar look, the regular kind of CGI. And thankfully, not long after we did a short film for Wing Feather, Spider-Man Spider-Verse released, and it really changed the industry in a hurry, that they said, oh, actually, people do want this stuff. And so it's been a delight. We've worked really hard to kind of change and buck trends and say, let's do it differently. And it really gives us, our own space to work in, which is pretty delightful.
What I love about it is that it's like you know, we don't have a Pixar budget, you know, we can't, there's no way in the world we could come close to that. So rather than trying to do like a halfway version of what it is that they're so good at, we were like, let's pivot the other direction. I feel like as a singer-songwriter, like when you're opening for a band, sometimes the band has all the bells and whistles and the lights. And it's like, if you're opening for them, you can either try to compete with that, or you can be like, I'm just going to be the guy with the acoustic guitar, and I'm going to walk out and I'm just going to do it small, you know, and do it this way. And in some ways you're kind of set up to win. You can kind of go like, you know, we're not going to even pretend that we can do that thing. Instead, we're going to pivot this direction and do something that's more organic.
Yeah, that's really awesome. And actually, we had Kevin Sorbo on a few months ago, and he told me, I had no idea, but when they made the God's Not Dead movie, the first one, I think it was a $2 million budget, and they expected to like double it or something when the movie came out, and it made 140 plus million. Yeah. So, I mean, if you guys had the Buzz Lightyear budget, you probably would have done a lot better than them, because I'm sure you would have taken it and done something cooler. But anyway, Andrew, I wanted to ask you, is it strange, like, what's the process of seeing your characters, I would think you imagined as you're writing this book, seeing them like animated? Is it like, did it change the way you look at your own books, or is it kind of weird?
Yeah, it's definitely weird, but it's very cool. It's like the, you know, that one of the great joys of being involved in this process is that I get to be one of the voices in the room, you know, to kind of raise my hand and make suggestions about the way the character looks or the way they sound, whatever. And so, yeah, it's a rare gift, and it's weird, but it's mainly just been a delight, partly because I've always loved television and movies, you know? So it's not like even as I wrote the books, I remember by the time I was finishing, I was thinking, man, it would be so cool to see this as a series, you know, it'd be so fun to, it wasn't hard to imagine it. So getting the right team in place means that I don't have to worry so much, you know. Everybody, it's funny, Chris, you don't have your copy of Wingfeather Saga there, do you? Chris has this like dog-eared copy of the first version of the first book that's got all these like, you know, post-it notes in it and underlines and stuff, and the team all knows the books probably better than I do at this point, so it makes it easy to trust these guys with the characters.
And I'll tell you this too, one of the fun things is Andrew over the years has read the books aloud, you know, in different settings and on the audiobook itself, and so you can hear his own character voice, you know, in that. And it was a little scary on our side, like casting, to find that right voice for these guys. You know, one of the things that's really challenging about our series is these characters are more subtle. They're kind of literature based, right? Where they're not strident and cartoony, right? Where they're like irritating one way or comedic another, you know, the kind of broad strokes. They're more fine strokes in how the characters are performed. And it was a challenge to find actors that could do that, that could get in that space. And, you know, we are here in Nashville, Tennessee, and there's a real draw for authenticity in the art we create. And we wanted these characters to feel like real people you could meet. And Andrew's been fantastic as a resource to go, that sounds false. That sounds like that character's reading a line. It sounds like they're saying a movie line, but they're not like actually in the moment. And helping the then actors to find that themselves. When every other show they're on, they're asked to be broad, you know, so much of the craft what we're making is that, right? Choices to be subtle and to be authentic.
Yeah, and you guys got some pretty good voice actors on the show. You have Jodie Benson from Little Mermaid. You have Henry Cusick from The Lost. So you definitely have some good names and some good actors to work with there.
Yeah, and if you don't show up with those people with good scripts and a good story, they kind of confound it in. you know? And what's been delightful is they saw the material, read the scripts, and were like, oh my gosh, I want to be a part of this. Like, there was no convincing. There was just like, can I please get in, you know, which is really gratifying. And I think it's a testament to the power of the story that Andrew put together.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's really cool. I guess a really cool situation, because you're going to have all these people who have read all the books, maybe multiple times, and they've imagined something all this time. And now you're going to have people who probably see, oh, what's this new TV show? And they start with the TV show and then go back and read the books. So you just have like this whole big world of imagination going on from two different camps there.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, that's part of what's so fun about being involved in both sides of the process. You know, like, I don't know if you saw the Lord of the Rings movies, but they had to change things in those movies. But for the most part, you get the spirit of the thing is accurate, you know, and there are some scenes that they just completely nailed and others that they didn't so much. But like, you almost kind of forget which is which after a while, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's like, and that's kind of the goal, is like, we're coming at this in a different way. So people who've read the books are going to encounter things that they didn't encounter in the books. And people who only watch the show are going to encounter things in the books that they didn't encounter in the show. And so I like the fact that it's kind of like we're giving a fuller experience.
Yeah. That's a really good point. I didn't even think of that. And, It makes me think that, I don't know if I told you guys this before the episode, I don't think I did, but this podcast is part of the C.S. Lewis Society. So of course we're Lewis and Tolkien heads. And I'm sure most people who read your books or who will watch the series are going to be reminded of Narnia, or they're going to be reminded of Lord of the Rings just because of the nature of the series and the analogies and everything. But what kind of influence did Lewis and Tolkien have on you when you were writing these books?
Oh man. I can't overstate the influence that they had. I mean, those guys just did something that nobody else had ever done, and I don't think really has ever done since. And I'm a huge fan. I grew up reading the Narnia books and watching the old Hobbit animated movie. Do you remember that? And so those things have been embedded in my imagination since I was a little kid. And And, you know, it's funny that both of those guys were coming at it in completely different ways. You know, Tolkien kind of famously didn't really like the Narnia books. I don't think that's very fair, but whatever. But, you know, he was such a world builder. And then C.S. Lewis was, you know, had this like really gentle storytelling voice, and he wasn't as concerned about this airtight world. And I think of the Wingfeather Saga as being kind of in between those two things. You know, I really wanted to build a big world. I wanted to feel like an epic fantasy. But at the same time, I couldn't pretend that this was going to be anything like as immaculate as the Lord of the Rings. I wanted it to be fun and have some whimsy in it. So it rides the line between the two.
Yeah. And I think that one of the things that I found is it's a descendant of in that a lot of us that read and I'm fan number one, when Andrew gave me that first book and it was like, oh my gosh, what are we into here? Is there's something in the sauce of this willingness to be playful, but build, you know, stakes that actually are perilous, right? To not play it too safe. But then, not go towards allegory. I think Narnia often gets a knock for allegory, which is really Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. More specifically, the rest of the series is just magical and wonderful. And there's a willingness to just let that story unfold and do what it does. Let stories do their work. So much in the faith side of things is so earnest in wanting to communicate its truths that it overrides the story, right? That it influences the story in unnatural ways. And Wingfeather was not that. Wingfeather is this very authentic story that just trusts the story to do its work and doesn't try to leverage it, try to make sure you got the point, you know, explain the midichlorians. Like, you know, it just stays out and says, let there be magic and mystery, and you can draw what you will out of it. And that kind of just trust of the audience that Andrew developed is something we absolutely are trying to do in the series, to let things be hinted at, to let there be a sense of abstract. I think the visuals are embracing that, to let the audience begin to engage your imagination, to fill in spaces. We don't describe every little thing, you know, let us be a more communal process in this story development and in the entertainment.
Yeah. That really is cool. And it appeals to both children and adults, the book series. And then of course the TV show too. And I think that's a good point that you made, where it's like, there is an element where you can force the analogy and everything too much, to where it's like your imagination can't really take over just because it's so forced. And I don't think you did that here. But what, I guess, level of, I'm trying to think of a way to quantify this question, because I've never written a fictional book before, but how important do you think imagination is to the Christian faith? It's something that's kind of ignored a lot of the time, I think.
I mean, it's hugely important. I mean, it's one of the ways that I think that we embody the image of God, you know, like it's one of the key factors in that. You know, Tolkien talked a lot about this on fairy stories. Just this idea that one of the highest callings of a creature that has been created by a creator is to subcreate, you know, to use your imagination. So as a Christian, you know, my friend Jonathan Rogers talks about how, you know, imagination is not necessarily seeing something that isn't there. Imagination is being able to see something that is there, but has been obscured. Hmm. Right. So if you imagine a teacher that has a knuckleheaded kid in her class, imagination is seeing who that kid could become one day, right? Or seeing past the brokenness in the kid and going, you know, I'm going to call out something that is obscured right now. And so, I think imagination has a thousand implications for what it means to be a Christian.
And I have to point out, the linkage of what Andrew just described is something that, again, you talked about the art style of the series. In a lot of the CGI animation, the industry was built to create photoreal imagery. Right? That was the hopes and dreams of that. And there was a question that we started asking of, that's an outcome. What other outcomes could there be? Could we use these tools? We're using really powerful tools like Unreal Engine that does a lot of work in photoreal. Could we use it wrongly towards more abstract? Because when you watch a finely rendered thing like Zootopia, let's say, all the pixels are on screen. Your audience is not asked to fill in anything. Instead, if you go more abstract, like in classic 2D or Miyazaki, you get that opportunity to invite the audience. What is that little hinted at thing over there? And it expands the world. It makes the world bigger and more interesting, and you have more questions. And we love having more questions. I think in a lot of stories, coming from, you know, certainly again, the faith, you have a lot of answers. We're interested in more questions and some answers, right?
Yeah, no, that's really cool. And I know you guys got to run in a second because you have a whole list of interviews today and probably every day. I just wanted to ask you before you go, what are you most looking forward to with the release of the new Winged Feather Saga TV show?
Oh, man. Honestly, like the feeling of being in the room at the premiere, which is coming up, and experiencing this thing that has been under wraps for so long with a whole room full of people is going to be just one of the coolest feelings ever.
Yeah, I'm most excited about families gathering around. I grew up in a home that did read alouds of family books, you know, from Little House on the Prairie and others. And just that sense of storytelling as a family. I think that so much of the stories that are out there, unfortunately, end up the kids do one thing and the adults do another. And I think we've developed a story here that the whole family gets to get around, from the kids to the teenagers and adults in between.
Awesome. Well, Andrew and Chris, thank you both so much for coming on. I'll link everything in the description below. For those of you listening, make sure you check out this new TV show. It's awesome. You're going to love it. Everybody's going to love it. It's such a cool, unique thing. Well, thank you guys so much for coming on.
Thanks, man.
Thanks for taking the time. Good to see you.
So make sure you check out the Winged Feather Saga series. Everything is down in the description below. I know I'll be watching it with my family. And it's awesome to have an alternative to some of the, I guess, the trash that's out there in entertainment now. It's not always so family friendly or theologically friendly. So it's nice to have stuff that is pushing back against that. It's just kind of like when we had Kevin Sorbo, he does the same kind of thing. So it's nice to have entertainment that we know is good for our family, that we know is supporting values that we hold and believe in, instead of indoctrinating our kids and putting things in their heads that they just have no business learning. So check out the Winged Feather Saga. It was awesome to have Andrew and Chris on. And thank you so much for listening to The Universe Next Door. We'll see you back here Monday night at 6 p.m. when we have Dr. Paul Copan on to talk about slavery and the Bible. Well, have a great week.